Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg. Today, I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished journalist turned author from Washington, D.C., USA, Holly McKay. Holly, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Holly is an author of a book titled Only Cry for the Living. She's an investigative and international affairs and war journalist with over 14 years of specialized focus on warfare, terrorism, and crimes against humanity. Wow, that's quite an amazing work that you are doing. But let me start by asking you, Holly, tell me about your own amazing journey as a war correspondent.
So I grew up in Australia in a little town in North Queensland, and I was actually a professional ballerina. Mm-hmm. So I went to boarding school at a young age and really thought that I'd be pursuing this career in the arts. However, when I was 18, I broke my ankle. That sort of sent me back to school. And I ended up going to finish the last semester of my degree in New York. And that's how I sort of got a random internship at Fox News. And I didn't even know internships were a thing. And I never considered a career in journalism. I always loved to write, but I didn't think you could make a living. Mm. And so then I got sponsored and sort of hired. I was 20 years old and I moved to LA and kind of had my own column. And that's sort of where my journalism career began. And then as I sort of got a little bit more into my 20s, I had this very insatiable appetite for different cultures and places and people. And I think that really came from my ballet career, because you spend so much time learning about choreographers and music and food and all these different parts of the world. And so I really just loved to travel. And so I was kind of drawn to a lot of dark places, I think, because I felt like I wanted to understand them as an individual. And if I needed to understand them, then I'm sure so many other people did as well. And that's sort of, and once I started that line of work, it's just, you can't imagine doing anything else. That's all you want in life. And that's certainly how I felt.
And tell me, for my viewers and listeners, which are some of the countries that you have, been to covering war?
Yeah, there's many. I've spent a lot of time. I've lived in Afghanistan for a long time, Iraq. I've been to Syria. I've been to Burma or Myanmar. Spent time in Venezuela and Colombia, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Ukraine, Russia. So I think I tabulated maybe all. Like 70 countries. Okay. So there's been a few.
Wonderful. So let's talk about your book now, Holly. Only Cry for the Living, which is a chilling legacy of the ISIS onslaught. And, I'm a published author of 8 books myself. And I'm, as I tell all my viewers and listeners, I'm always very partial to authors. So let me start by asking you first, is the book available on Amazon?
It is, and I will also send you a special link for your Indian viewers as well, where they can purchase it directly in India.
Okay, thank you. So I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to check out Holly's book, Holly McKay, Only Cry for the Living. So now let's talk about your book. What went into researching for this book?
So I was working a lot, kind of going in and out of Iraq and Syria. Really, it started in 2014 when ISIS sort of came in, and it was this new terrorist group that suddenly took over a huge amount of the country. And I was very intrigued by what was happening and the stories there. And I was continuing to go in and out. And it really wasn't until about 2016. So a couple of years in, I remember I came home and I looked around my Los Angeles apartment at the time, and there were just dozens of these little black notebooks where I was constantly taking notes and interviews and doing my work. And I thought, there's something more that I want to do with this. Because so many of the stories, they don't make the news. You know, news, when you're working in sort of daily news, it can become quite dry. And I wanted to tell a much deeper story than that. I thought, there are these so many stories that will never see the air unless I can put them into something of a more narrative form. And I've always really believed in highlighting micro stories to tell the macro picture. So we often look at a country or a conflict and it seems so confusing from the outside. And I think when we tell those individual stories, it gives us in that are 5,000 miles away an ability to relate in a different way and understand that big without being overwhelmed by numbers and statistics. So then I really started to put it together. And then, so the book really takes you from 2014 through to the end of 2018, sort of the rise and the fall of ISIS, and a little bit of that aftermath as well. And those really individual stories, but from every perspective. So you've obviously got displaced people and victims and survivors, but you've also got the various different militaries on the ground. You've got ISIS themselves. You've got different religious minorities. So I tried to speak to as many different types of people as possible, just to give that really comprehensive picture.
Very interesting. And based on all the work that you've been doing in such difficult regions, what is the human cost of war?
The human cost of war, and I've had to sort of toy with this so much, but I really believe that there are no winners in war. I have never seen anything good come out of war for anybody. I mean, we can take the look at the last place I've been working, obviously, is Ukraine. And nobody wins in that war. Ukrainians don't win because their country is destroyed. The Russians don't win because they've been the most isolated country in the world now and losing countless soldiers. The US and European taxpayers certainly don't win, continuing to have to send weapons. So I've just never in the 20th or 21st century seen anything good come out of war. And so I'm sort of the anti-war war reporter who really just believes we have to do more to stop these things before they start. And I know that's easier said than done in hindsight, but we've got to do a lot more, because violence, like the way that it is now, is just never the answer.
Well said. And of course, you must have seen the incredible cost of this war on women and children.
Absolutely. And women and children always pay the price, I think. They're the people that are always caught in the crossfire, the people that are always left behind. And that is heartbreaking. And for me, being able to tell their stories, I hope gives them sense of justice, because most of them will never see justice for what's done to them. So I hope that at least in telling their story, they know that they still have a voice.
Well said. And my next question to you, Holly, is that does war bring out the best and the worst in people?
Absolutely. And I think that is why, as a writer, I'm so drawn to it, because you have these two extremes all put in one place. You see, I mean, the absolute horrors of the world and what humans can do to other humans, but you also just see the most incredible selfless acts and strangers helping strangers in a way that communities come together that just never happens, you know, in our regular lives. And so it also, at the same time, it's this sort of beautiful lesson of what we're capable of when we work together.
Yeah, and I keep seeing, you know, the amazing amount of work that journalists do in on the war front when they're bringing stories of these people. You know, some great stories, some not so good stories about human beings. But tell me, do you really feel that journalism can bring justice?
It's something I struggle with a lot, and I have struggled with it and continue to struggle with it. I think that, I mean, there are certainly cases where journalists have been able to bring attention to things and that and not, but my concern in this day and age is that there is just so much noise out there. There's so much social media, so much activism, and then there is a big sort of confusion between journalism and activism. And I think journalists have to be a little bit careful about that. And so my worry is that there is just so much noise. And when I continue to work on these wars and continue to see horrors and nothing changes, it does make me a little bit depressed about it. But I also, at the same time, I have to take the weight off my shoulders and recognize I'm not a lawmaker. I'm not a politician. I am a writer. And my job is to write. What happens after that, I cannot control. But what I can control is the story I put out. And I think if we put too much of a burden on ourselves, we will just get too overwhelmed and we can't do the work. But I think the work is still important. And then we can just only hope that it gets into the right hands and the people that read it can do something more about it.
Well said. And when you are, you know, right there on the front of the war or talking to people in unsafe situations, do you feel any kind of a fear when you are there?
think you have to have a healthy dose of fear. I think that you have to be sensible about the situation you're going into. I mean, I don't think it's particularly healthy to go into a situation where there are howitzer missiles landing 50 feet away from you, and you're like, meh, it's another Tuesday.
Absolutely.
So I think you have to have that healthy survival instinct, but you shouldn't go in there and panic. You can't go in there and start waving your arms. You have to be as level-headed as you can. But I think fear is there for a reason, and fear protects us. So I think it's really important. I'm someone who very much listens to my intuition, and my intuition has saved my life so many times. And it sounds crunchy granola, but it's so true that our instincts never lie. And if we can tap into those instincts, we are going to be much better. And keeping ourselves alive and keeping those around us alive.
And for my viewers and listeners, would you be able to share any story of when when you worked with your own instinct?
Oh gosh, there are so many. There was one particular occasion where I was in Afghanistan. And this was back in 2017. It was the sort of start of the spring offensive, and the Taliban were just launching just endless kind of suicide bombings and things. And I remember waking up, and it was my last day there. I'd been there a while, and I sort of had this feeling that an official was coming to meet with me for an interview, and I just had this feeling that I didn't want to be in this compound anymore. Like I needed to go, and I wanted to go out to the Serena Hotel, which is a lovely hotel in Kabul. And my fixer, who's sort of a local that we use to help translate and set up meetings and things, and he just kept saying, it's too dangerous to be going in the streets. This is not something we should be doing right now. And I just said, I need to get out of here. And eventually I managed to convince him, a lot of arm twisting. And as soon as we sort of left, I remember there was this big cement tanker truck that passed us, and then suddenly it blew up, and 180 people right around the place that I was
Amazing.
staying were killed. And that, had I not left, 3 minutes, that would have been me. And so I can't really explain to you what that feeling was. I can't explain where it came from, because it did. It came from nowhere. There was no reason for me to want to leave that morning. But it was there, and it was so strong that I couldn't ignore. And I experienced those in a number of different situations. And yeah,
Amazing.
it takes a little bit of time to learn to listen to yourself, but when you do, it's incredible.
I agree. Well, thank God for your instinct. My next question to you, Holly, is that based on your own understanding of so many different countries that you worked with, antisocial elements, if I can use a slightly polite term, what is your view that if terrorist groups are in power, how does that affect national security?
I mean, it affects it in every way. It's an incredibly volatile situation for the world, for the neighborhood of these countries, for the people of these countries. And democracies are certainly not a perfect concept. It has many flaws and flailabilities, but there is some sort of semblance of safety in at least having, as we say, the US checks and balances in place. And certainly I would hate to see anybody having to live under a terrorist regime that could take decades to eventually get rid of. So it is an alarming and very concerning thought for the world.
Very interesting. And when you are covering any conflict, is there any common thread that runs through it?
Again, I go back to the common thread is nobody wins. It's a lot of, as I said, there are, of course, those beautiful moments, but there is just so much suffering and so much unnecessary loss. And what kills me is death becomes sort of normalized in this way that it should never be normalized. We should never accept that a 2-year-old child just got hit by artillery. And but yet, when you're in these conflicts, it becomes so routine, and that's the part that absolutely destroys me, and nobody wins.
Very amazing. My next question to you is, how important is community and compassion?
Absolutely everything. And I always say my mantra in life is really compassion is often the solution. So even when we're getting in a fight with our significant other or the lady in Starbucks who pushed in front of us, usually there's something going on with that person. If we can just take a step back and think, I don't know what that person is going through today, but I'm going to treat them with compassion and stay away or whatever that may be. And kindness and compassion, it is absolute core of, I think, who we are. And I think as a journalist, I think that the old stereotype of the war reporter that had to be super hardened and go in there and write with kind of a stone face, I think that's really gone. I think what readers and viewers want now is they want that compassion. They want to see that reporter reacting to a situation. And certainly for me, it's important to have that. And I think if I don't, if I ever get to a point in my life where I feel that I don't have that compassion or I'm burned out or whatever that may be, it's time to take a break. Because once you sort of stop resonating with your subjects, you can never do the story justice.
Very amazing. And I'm going to come back to your book again because it's about ISIS and a lot about Afghanistan. Do you see some kind of a generational gap in education for women in Afghanistan?
Oh, absolutely. It's absolutely broken my heart what's happening there. In the beginning, I sort of stayed during the fall and was very curious about how the Taliban was going to govern. I wasn't a particularly big fan of the previous government only because it was incredibly corrupt. And most of the money that was being funneled in there was never actually going to the Afghans or to the programs. It was lining the pockets of generals and people that were high up. And the corruption was so systemic. It was just on every level that drove me absolutely crazy. So it wasn't a big surprise when the Taliban actually came because they were able to manipulate that. But I did have, hope that maybe this would be a different Taliban than what we saw in the 90s. But I think, and I went back to Afghanistan again and a few months ago, and it's really sad to me that unfortunately I see so much of the receding back to that time and just sort of the restrictions that are being put on women where they can't go to school. I just think it's absolutely heartbreaking. They can't work in NGOs and I worry for their future, and that's half the population, and the impact that will have on Afghanistan. Especially, we see so many of the very few international aid organizations that actually stayed after the fall. Now, most of them are leaving because, they can't ask donors to give them money for a place that doesn't allow women to have some sort of equality and at least work. So, I'm very sad for Afghanistan and sort of what the future women face.
I agree. And when you are there, do a lot of women reach out to you?
Yes and no. I mean, I certainly met many incredibly brave Afghan women. I was fortunate enough to meet a bunch of activists that were running underground schools. So that was sort of great to see. They had hidden schools and houses, and they were kind of getting together and doing the curriculum. And these teenage girls were just so eager to learn. And so I thought that was a really beautiful thing. So you do meet women. You meet a lot of women that are just desperate to leave. I still have a lot of women reaching out to me, just how do I leave? How can I get out of the country? And that is really heartbreaking because, again, I am a journalist and I can't take on all those sort of problems of the world
Absolutely.
outside of my realm. And it is heartbreaking, but you have to set boundaries for yourself or otherwise you'll drown. And Afghanistan was one place that I found that I had to be very firm in my boundaries about what I could and couldn't do, and I didn't want to overpromise anybody because people are still so desperate.
Well said. And when I served on the board of Gavi for many, many years, the Vaccine Alliance, for a couple of years, the health minister of Afghanistan was on the board with me, and that she was a woman and a very, very competent woman. I just wonder sometimes where she must be in today's regime. But Holly, coming to my last question, and I want to come back to your book, and this is for the many, many viewers and listeners who will listen to our conversation. Can you share one or two interesting stories from your book that have touched you?
Oh my gosh, so many of them touch me. I think I don't want to give it away too much, but if you get to the last section of the book, That's where you'll see where the title comes from, Only Cry for the Living. And this was an extraordinary situation where I'd gone with a civil defense unit from Mosul, and we went to a place called Talafra, and we were actually digging up mass graves that ISIS had sort of made this jail and then buried the bodies in the sewerage. And so it was, you know, just incredibly sad and just gruesome, sort of very morbid work. And watching these men and these volunteer groups, and this is what all they do. They go around where mass graves have been located to dig up the remains, to, you know, give them some sort of dignity, and you know, so they can sort of be buried with dignity. And I just sort of had that extraordinary moment and read the book, and it's sort of a lot of words of wisdom that a young child gave me. And you know, that again is the other thing with Iraq, is that a lot of these young boys and girls, and especially in impoverished places, they may not go to school, but they do have so much life wisdom to give. And I always think that is a really sort of extraordinary thing. And then the other part of the book that I cover a lot is the sexual violence. And that is, I know that's hard to read sometimes and to understand, but it is so prevalent in every war that I've ever really covered. And it's still so much shame and taboo around it that we don't talk about it when we should, because you can take a life without killing it. And that's certainly one way that it inflicts pain upon, especially women, but men too. But in this case, the Yazidis, which is a religious minority in Iraq, they really broke, they were sort of taken by ISIS. They called devil worshippers, but they really broke the taboos in talking about this. Oftentimes, you know, it doesn't get discussed for cultural reasons, but the Yazidis were incredible in coming out and talking about what had happened to them, and really shattering these walls, because they wanted to bring awareness and try to make sure that it didn't happen again.
Very interesting. And on that note, Holly, thank you so much for speaking to me. I mean, your book, your story, your conversation about war. I mean, I, you know, as I was talking to you, I was just thinking what it must be like for you to be there right up front with all this action going on, bombs and so on and so forth. Thank you again also for speaking to me about your own journey on becoming a journalist. Thank you for speaking to me about your book, Only Cry for the Living. And I'm once again going to ask all of yours to go and check out your book. I'm going to order a copy myself. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.